This is the Eric Francis Show, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's Monday. The Stanley Cup final is over. Some really great sound bites, some great visuals last night. Congratulations to the Colorado Avalanche. I don't think anybody disagrees that they were the class of the NHL this season. I love all the accolades that are being thrown at Cale Makar for basically winning almost every trophy he possibly could have this year. Well deserved there. We've got two great guests today, and I want to get right into them. The first is Gord Stellick. You know him, you love him. He's Mr. Everyman in the media. He's been around for a while. He was the Leafs GM 1988. He's done and seen a lot in the game. I want to talk to him about a number of things involving the finals, but I also want him to tell some great stories. He worked for Harold Ballard, one of the most despicable men in sports history, and he ended up quitting because of him, and I want to find out a little bit more about that story. We're going to get into a whole lot of that stuff. Second half of the show, we'll be talking to Kristen Anderson. You know her from Post Media for all those years covering the Flames. Now she's in charge of PR for the Calgary Stampede, and I thought, you know what, we got to get up to speed on what we're about to see, feel, hear at the Stampede starting next Friday. So she's going to get us up to speed on the rodeo, the chucks, relay races, all the other stuff that's going on. But I want to start opening up the show by just saying thank you to Boomer. Everybody knows Dean Moberg. Boomer on the morning show here for so many years, did such a great job. And I've always admired the way he was able to take that space in the morning, a space that I think some people take a little too seriously for sports, and just add a whole lot of levity, a whole lot of recipes, a whole lot of lifestyle stuff. And I just think he was great at what he did for so many years. And he announced very quietly this morning that this will be his last week hosting the morning show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. His last show will be Thursday because there is no show Friday. It's Canada Day. But anyway, kudos and a tip of the hat to my longtime colleague, friend, Boomer. I asked if he wanted to come on the show and talk a little bit about it, but he's content to just kind of quietly move on to some new stuff. So we wish him all the best and thank him for all his time. Okay, our first guest today, Gord Stellick, as I mentioned earlier, the youngest GM in the history of the NHL. 30 years of age, he ran the Toronto Maple Leafs, and then wised up and said, no, the big money's in media. I got to get into media. That's where it's at. Gordo, thanks for joining us, my friend. I appreciate it.
No problem, Eric. Yeah, and I was also the youngest ex-general manager in Leaf history, NHL history as well, 16 months later. So I got two records there.
Well, I want to get into that because I'm fascinated by that. I grew up in Toronto, going to games, and I'd look over at that Harold Ballard in that bunker, and I was taught by my parents to absolutely despise him. My father, actually, every game, because he hated the fact that he supported the Leafs because his son liked hockey, so he wanted to take me to games. We'd go to about five or six a year, but he'd always go to some vendor outside, out on Church Street or somewhere, and buy these shelled peanuts, and my dad loved opening them and spreading the shells all over the floor. That was his tiniest little way of getting back at Harold Ballard by making a mess at Maple Leaf Gardens. So I want to ask you about Ballard in a sec, but I think we need to put a bow on the Stanley Cup final. You host Sirius XM radio in the morning, so you've already had a whole bunch of guests and had a whole bunch of talk about it. I'm curious what the main talking points are when you spoke to people this morning about what we just saw.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. We kind of kidded that Daryl Sutter's wisdom about, what did he say? It's going to be 8 wasted days when you play Colorado, like before the playoffs started. I know this went longer than 8 days. At least we got a series out of it. You know, you really want every series, unless you have skin in the game, to go 6 or 7. And this one did. I think, Eric, the 2 points were, one, just about, I mean, Colorado's been in this mode for a couple of years. They've been ready to burst out. And you know, their time was maybe last year or the year before, that this year they really got all their everything aligned in the right direction. They had a phenomenal regular season on top of that. You know, Tampa Bay kind of has learned that when you go deep in the playoffs, that the regular season, maybe you got to pace yourself a little bit. So I just think, you know, with all the guns a-blazing, whether it's McKinnon, Landeskog, those that have been there forever, and then Joe Sakic quietly being the architect of, you know, some really good trade deadline deals. I think the only question was going to be Darcy Kemper, the goaltending, Kemper versus Vasilevsky, but, you know, they got good enough goaltending at least to win. So certainly worthy Stanley Cup champions. And the other, Eric, is just that it was great having, you know, two heavyweights in the final. No disrespect to Montreal or Dallas or others in the past, but, you know, this is still an epic Tampa Bay Lightning team, ravaged by injuries, but still what an accomplishment to be in 12 consecutive playoff series.
Absolutely. We're talking to Gord Stellick, and I want to get his thoughts on the final and so many other things. But Cale Makar, now, you know, you and I and all of our colleagues at Sports, that we get asked for predictions at the beginning of the playoffs. I don't understand why people are, I want to hear your words. Is surprise the word when it comes to Cale Makar? Because, and again, I don't get many predictions right, but I predicted Colorado would win the Stanley Cup, as did most people. But I think I was the only one who predicted that Makar was going to win the Conn Smythe. That's not a surprise to me. Is this a big coming out party that everyone outside of Calgary maybe didn't know about?
Yeah, you know, Eric, it's funny. It's like it's been this coming out party really started the first game he hit the ice. And there's something about defensemen that historically the Norris Trophy, like, be like the same four guys were amongst the top three for years and years. And, you know, you had Ray Bourque and then Nick Lidstrom and, you know, then Chris Pronger or, you know, whenever your spot was, you kind of had to earn your stripes a little bit, whether it was reality wise or perception wise. I mean, it is the toughest position to learn, but I think guys are coming out, and women as well, but just so well coached, so prepared. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you end up skipping all these apprentice years that people think you're supposed to have, like Cale Makar and you know, people comparing the skating to Bobby Orr. Like, I throw Borja Salming, Brian Leach in as two others that, you know, had that kind of skill. Like, Lidstrom was a different type of D, Bourque was different, Pronger was different, you know, all that. But I think we just look at his age and the fact he's, what, his third year in the NHL, and you're kind of making this assumption that, okay, he still needs some time to grow. Man, if he's going to grow anymore, holy mackerel. I mean, just phenomenal what he does. But just, like, I think the skill level is what catches people by surprise. And I think when you see a playoff series, because during the course of the season, if you're not following the Avalanche full-time, you're catching games or snippets of games. And then in the playoffs, you hunker down and watch the best play the best. And you can really, you know, do a deeper dive. And I noticed that. Like, I went to the mainstay, Nathan MacKinnon, right? I think we get lazy when it comes down to Smythe Trophy predictions. And Cale Makar, certainly we're not debating whether he should have got it or not.
No, absolutely, right? And again, because he's a Calgary kid, people here are, very familiar with him. They watch him. Everybody's in awe of his skating. And I think you're right. I think that's a good point. When we're all watching the final, there's such a spotlight. And every time he makes a foray up the ice and jumps into the offense a lot more than most other defensemen in the league because of his skating, it all grabs our attention. So anyway, well-deserved for Cale Makar. Really happy for him. And glad that he's walking home with more hardware than anybody else this year in the NHL. Okay, Harold Ballard, let's get into it. I love Harold Ballard stories because I hated him so much. You resigned from your Leafs position because of interference from Harold Ballard. What was the interference? How bad was it? And get into some juicy details.
Well, and, you know, keep in mind, I always, like, if it wasn't a unique setup in a very, very small front office, I wouldn't have got the opportunity to work there and the opportunity to grow there. So I always throw that in appreciation. Mm. And back then in the 80s, you know, first of all, when there were 21 teams, I'd have to say, Eric, six or seven of them really were at a different level, management wise and ownership wise and, you know, paying people and hiring good people. And Calgary was one of them. Toronto wasn't, you know, so it's almost like nowadays, there's, you know, nowadays of the 32 teams, there's way more of them that are, you know, managed in kind of a big league way. But so that year, I think a lot of teams just had an edge just by based on their ownership and management. The first thing I'd say is, I don't know if you were a kid then, but some of the Calgary media has been around for a while. That was the era of Marge Schott running the Cincinnati Reds, and George Steinbrenner with the New York Yankees, and the media was just in your face all the time. Like I look back, there's a great 30 for 30 about the Lakers and Celtics, you know, their battles. And you forget, Eric, that the media is right there. But there's no podium like there is now. You know, they're in your face, right? And and that's part, you know, part where owners could make headlines if they wanted headlines, or if they didn't want them. You know, Ballard liked making headlines. So, you know, the more outrageous got you page one. So he was a guy in his 70s and then 80s that was having the time of his life. He was, if you met him, probably your first reaction would be, what a nice man. That's what would probably surprise you. He had this kind of reputation. But actually, when you met him one-on-one, that would be your first impression. But with me, it came down to, like, I had been very fortunate, and I was kind of the fair-haired guy, young guy in an office doing everything. And I really didn't expect to become general manager when I did, just circumstances that I realized probably in his 80s, he didn't have a big network out there anymore who to hire. So I kind of came by default, which I never didn't, you know, I never pretended it wasn't otherwise. And so I knew there'd be a point where it was catcher in the rye. I was falling in that rye. I would cease to be the fair haired boy. And and I'm sure a lot of GMs still have this now, whether it's interfering owners, officious owners, presidents, whatever. So there was a juggling act trying to get what you want done on the ice, and also placating what the owner wanted to get, you know, get done. And also the fact he really wanted to show that he owned the team. And at the end, with I had agreed to take the job, and John Brophy would remain as the coach. And he wouldn't have been my choice to be the coach. I love Brof. I mean, I had a great relationship with Brof, and the owner Ballard loved him. So he was going to stay. And a big thing was when I was able to get Ballard to agree that we'd make the coaching change. And it happened very professionally. Brof was just great, went back to South Carolina and coached in, you know, more a level that was he could succeed in for a number of years. And then God rest his soul, George Armstrong agreed to be the interim coach. Because that's all that Ballard would accept. And then it just got running deeper and deeper into the summer that it was going to be George was going to be the guy. And really, it became an untenable situation. So it was tough to be a 32-year-old guy, 31 at the time, I guess, and resign from that job and go work for the New York Rangers for a couple of years. But things then came about. Floyd Smith took over, Doug Carpenter was the coach and what have you. And that really was it. Like, I couldn't go behind. I didn't want to start the season with a complete charade as far as the coaching goes. It would have been unfair to George, and it would have been unfair to Leaf fans. And I thought I could work it out at the 11th hour, but it got down to the 11th hour and 59th minute.
Now, it's interesting. Okay, so again, we're talking to Gord Stellick about his time when he was general manager of the Leafs at age 30 and 31. This is in 1988. Did the media, did they crush you at first? I mean, or just obviously question the decision to hire you at age 30? Because obviously that's never happened before.
Yeah, well, it's funny because the media were good to me because I'd had a good relationship and understood the media. Like back then, okay. And, you know, the younger people listening, and I don't like always saying that younger people listening, but the media was the message. They were the medium back then. There wasn't social media. Clubs couldn't, you know, put out or control information dissemination like they could nowadays. So I did a good professional relationship, and I just didn't. And I understand when you communicate to the media, you're communicating to the fans. So I tried to be professional about it. And they gave me, I got treated well, but then when things heat up, you know, it's everyone looking for a scoop. It's then the owner. That's when it's dangerous, when the owner says things all of a sudden, because that gets sensationalized, and it's certainly perception wise, you know, hurts your status, whatever. So that ended up being like you're kind of dreading opening, getting the papers in the morning, whatever. And, and you know, the owner's headline is, you know, Stellick won't be the chief bottle washer anymore, something like that, you know. So like I said, it was an interesting roller coaster, but I was prepared for the media stuff. I understood what it meant to be with the Toronto Maple Leafs and the kind of media coverage back then you got.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you knew what you were getting into. But I think when you work for Ballard, you're not sure what you're going to get, to your point, any given day. And there was a time, like you say, people used to open up the newspaper, and if you're just a general consumer, you couldn't wait to see what was in the newspaper about your favorite team. If you were involved with the team, you might have been terrified with what you might have read.
Yeah, well, Eric, I found out the way I found out I was going to be general manager. Like I presented, we had no GM. We had an interim situation with really nobody, just a triumvirate of myself and John Brophy and Dick Duff for a few months. And so I'd kind of given Ballard this big, you know, on a typewriter, big memo about, you know, everything in the organization. Because, you know, we'd been chatting. I said, well, I'll put it down in writing. And he'd come next couple of days, sometimes in his house coat because he lived there. And, you know, he'd say, this is what you think about the scouting or this or whatever. And I found out on a Sunday morning, a Milt Dunnell column in the Toronto Star. He was Ballard's go-to media guy, and he was a revered writer, that I'd become general manager. The Toronto Star delivery on Sunday morning tipped me off that 4 days later I would become general manager. So that's the way things were back then in certain
that's
situations.
Amazing. So 4 days go by before it's actually made. What did you not get a phone call from Harold Ballard that day saying, "Oh, sorry, son, I meant to tell you, this is what's happening."
Yeah, it was weird because I'm trying to think if he was away or something. And then so for 4 days, then other papers started following up. So people were sick of me by the time I formally got hired. You know, but just this unknown guy all of a sudden getting like, you know, 3 days worth of media coverage. So then it was confirmed. And the other weird part is I just went back up to my office, right? Like, it's not like you have to move or anything like that. Like, you just, you know, when we came out of the director's room, I was used to walking around the media. Instead, that the media was for me. And then I went like just back to work. And, you know, you picked up from whatever you were doing before that meeting. I mean, that was one plus that for me, that I understood the landscape. I understood exactly what I was getting into. That's always the learning process, even in a way more professional operation. But ours was so unique that you really couldn't explain it to anybody.
Amazing. Amazing. He's Gord Stalick. I'm Eric Francis. It's the Eric Francis Show. It's brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. We do it every Monday, and we focus on storytellers. And we've got a good one with us in Gordo. And I love, I've always enjoyed coming on your shows. I think you're so good at what you do. How long did it take for you to kind of make that transition from management into the media? Because it took quite a lot of years, didn't it?
Well, it's funny because after the New York Rangers, I didn't leave. I got fired. So I learned the other side of it. And so I came back to Toronto and interviewed for a couple of positions, actually talked to Cliff Fletcher about coming back with the Leafs, but he ended up hiring Bill Waters, which was a good hire. And then when Bill Waters got hired, he was doing the color on radio with Joe Bowen, and the season had already started. I think they're about 12 games into the season. So I knew the people from, which is now our radio network's The Fan, but it was Telemedia Radio Network back then. And I all of a sudden was on the Leaf charter to Washington the next day to be Joe's color commentator. So it just really kind of came from there. And then a guy named Rick Pyman got me involved in a show, American Hockey League magazine show called Rinkside, which was a kind of a really, really neat half hour show on the American Hockey League back when nobody got any exposure in the AHL. And then Eric, all of a sudden, you know, you're a media guy. Like all of a sudden you're a media. Like it was weird. It's all of a sudden from being an ex-GM looking on the media side. And I was certainly, you know, green when I started, you know, I had no question about it. I had to work at things, but I know that my strength was bringing a unique perspective, having been on the management side. And I look at it, and I've heard you when you write as well, that you want to connect with the fans. Like, you want the person out there to think they're sitting right now with you and me, having a beer or having a coffee. I mean, that's all you want. We're not splitting the atom. There's no heavy lifting. And everyone's opinion, if they're a passionate sports fan, they're everyone's opinion is as good as everyone else's. So it just is something that all, and then all sports radio started. Like, hey, when I was ex-GM, or when I was in New York, I listened to WFAN. That was the only all sports station in North America then, I think. And then all of a sudden, when, you know, the Fan got launched at a real fortunate time for me in Toronto.
Absolutely. It did work out well for you. And you wear so many different hats in our business now. And I think it's because you can give that perspective that so many of us can't. And I want to take you back to 1987. Toronto Maple Leafs are drafting, and you hear one of the biggest draft table arguments you've ever heard, and it involves Joe Sakic. Please tell us more about that.
Yeah, I got to tell you. First of all, I told Joe Sakic the story when he got inducted in the Hockey Hall of Fame. I used to kind of MC those weekends. I also remember his parents being there, and he said they loved when he played over in the World Championships. They pronounced it properly, Sakic, whatever country it was. But so the point being is, Eric, everyone loves draft table intrigue. Everyone's an expert right now, even if they haven't seen anyone play, right? And people love hearing. So in 1987, when I was an assistant general manager, we're picking, and actually here's the timeliness of it all. We're picking seventh overall, and we're expecting a guy named Luke Richardson to be there when we pick seventh. Ironically, Luke Richardson being hired by the Chicago Blackhawks as their coach today. So you think about it. We get after the first six picks, whatever, where it looks like it's going to be an automatic one. And Floyd Smith, all of a sudden, makes his case for Joe Sakic, like out of nowhere. And John Brophy is the coach, and he gets pissed because he doesn't want another small centerman. You know, he's got too many small guys. He hears we're going to get this big defenseman in Luke Richardson. Now, imagine a coach having that kind of input, right? An NHL coach never watches them, but Ballard, you know, Ballard was Brophy was a favorite of Ballard, who just kind of sat there. So I think it impacted. Jerry McNamara was the GM, and this argument went on, and all of a sudden Jerry, you know, kind of went with the easy way, taking Luke Richardson and you know, pacifying Brophy, who, you know, whatever, just kind of reading the tea leaves that way. And I always give Floyd Smith, because like Floyd obviously would have presented that before in scouts meetings. And I guess that he would understand that we're looking for a big defenseman. And, you know, maybe in his way, he hoped that Luke would be gone. And, you know, anyway, I value a scout by not who we draft so much, but their opinions on other players. Right. And when, you know, Quebec, they picked ninth, but they didn't take him. They took Brian Fogarty. Right. And then they had the 15th pick. And so they had two picks in the first round, and they took Joe Sakic. And, you know, imagine if we, the Toronto Maple Leafs at the time, had got Joe Sakic. That literally was the best argument I heard in my 10 years at the Leafs draft table, you know, just before the pick happened. And like I say, typical Toronto fashion, all due respect to Luke, he was a solid NHLer. But I always say, hey, you know, Floyd Smith, I give him credit for really going to the wall and battling it out. And, you know, like I said, back then, who was in with the owner, who was out with the owner, came into play, which really shouldn't have been the case.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so funny, you're talking to Brad Treliving, and you would know this having worked, you know, on that side of the ledger in the NHL. I think it's very much, I think Brian Burke said he would fire anyone on the spot who ever argued with him about a pick at the draft day table. Is that generally your understanding of how it works now? I mean, there's so much time and effort put into putting together the final list, and by draft day, there are no more arguments. You just take the next man on the list. Am I correct?
Yeah. Except when you get in the later rounds, it could be different, but certainly in the first round and maybe the second round, but later on, you kind of, you know, you got certain scouts that you value, maybe a little bit more of that gut feel. So when you know the odds are against any player, say, from the third round on, having substantial NHL careers. So that's quite often what you'll get into it, that, you know, Eric Francis likes John Smith and Gord Stellick likes Bill Watson. And, you know, we'll kind of, you know, because but early on, yeah, that stuff shouldn't happen. But I understand, like I said, Floyd at the 11th hour and good on him for making the good argument. Unfortunately for Leaf fans, and probably fortunately for Joe Sakic, it all didn't turn out.
It is true. Okay, last question. We're talking to Gord Stellick. I'm always so fascinated because, again, you've been on both sides of the ledger. You've been in media for so long, and you do so well at it. I'm wondering, are you more comfortable here? Because it seems from my seat, this is the way better side to be on. Yeah, I get we don't get paid anywhere near what the guys on the other side of the room get paid. But with all the sniping and all the scrutiny and all the pressure, I just wonder how you'd compare those two jobs, being in management on an NHL team compared to being in the media.
Yeah, you know, I grew up dreaming of doing what I do now. And it didn't exist, all sports radio, but I dreamed of being a writer, a hockey writer, something like that. So, this is living my dream. The Leaf side, it was a weird confluence of events how I got in. But you know, that was a magical time. It was so neat to drive and park your car beside Maple Leaf Gardens and be there. But to your point, You do and don't miss the living and dying with wins and losses. Like, it's neat to have for a phase because you got skin in the game. But also, that's the nice part about this job. Doug McLean had a good line. He just said, you know, GMs now, they're making a ton of money, but they're having no fun, right? You know, it just where do they all learn never to smile once when the camera's on them? Like, even when they scored. Yeah. Like, how come you flash to every press box? And I'm not saying they should be having a margarita or something like that and a big cigar. But, like what's come into this game that stone face is just out there, soundbite, you know, rather than kind of the fun thing, the personalities involved and all that. So I really loved it. It was a magical time being with the Leafs. It was a brief time with the Rangers. That was neat. But, yeah, I really enjoyed it and felt very fortunate to do this. I had a talk show on, like you do, or you're doing now, on The Fan in Toronto for 17 years. And so now I'm back. That was kind of a challenge to learn all sports. But I was a big sport. I am a big sports fan. So I just feel fortunate I get to still talk hockey. So and hopefully there's still a listener or two.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, that's nice to hear that this is something you dreamed of doing growing up. Same with me. That's all I ever wanted to do was be a sports writer and be involved in the business. And I remember my mother saying to me once, actually the night after going to a Leaf game, I was reading the Toronto Star at age 14. And she said, well, maybe one day you'd like to be paid to go to Maple Leaf Gardens and watch the Leafs play. And that sentence changed my life when I realized, boy, that does sound like a real nice confluence of my passion in life. With what I might want to do in life. Now, I still don't know how to write very well or speak very well, but we get through it, right, Gordon? We get through it and we get to do what we love, which is cool.
Well, it's nice. Your mom had a big profile, too, as a writer for the Toronto Sun as well. So, correct?
Yeah. No. So, yes,
yeah, that's your mom. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Financial Post. No, she was a very big mentor for me and had a heavy influence, like I said, with that conversation and moving on. But absolutely, it's just nice to talk to people who love what they do. And I think most people in the sports media do love what they do. I always like hearing it. So thanks for sharing that with us, my friend. Thanks for telling a few good stories here. And I would love to have you on again real soon.
Well, anytime. It's nice seeing some people in person, too. So hopefully that comes up down the road. But absolute pleasure. Anytime, Eric. Appreciate it.
Okay, that's Gord Stelick. Thanks, Gord. We'll talk soon. That's Gord Stelick. Man wears a lot of different hats, but just a great radio host. Asks great questions and really, really admire the way he conducts himself, and always enjoy going on his shows with him on Sirius XM or the Sportsnet radio network. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Kristen Anderson will be here to talk to us about the Stampede and about Kevin Costner, even Cole Hauser, Rip. People who watch Yellowstone know exactly what I'm talking about. I want some dirt on all these guys. Maybe not dirt, but I just want to talk about them because they're coming to town, as is the Calgary Stampede, and that just changes the whole complexion of the city for 10 days, and I can't wait to do it all over again. Okay. The Eric Francis Show, it's brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live standard bred racing is at Century Downs every Friday and Saturday through the entire month of July and the first 2 weeks of August. So, Friday, post time, 5:15. Saturday, post time, 2:15 for the next 6 weeks. They've had to move their schedule around of late. No more Tuesday racing. Now it's Fridays and Saturdays at Century Downs. Hope you go down and enjoy the ponies. You're listening to The Eric Francis Show. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
This is The Eric Francis Show, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
If you don't know what that music's from, you need to get streaming Yellowstone, one of the great shows of our time. And of course, anybody who watches the show knows, and most people who don't even know that Kevin Costner is coming to open up the Stampede as our parade marshal on Friday. And I thought, who better to talk to open up our discussions about the Stampede, the rodeo, the Chucks, and the movie stars than Kristen Anderson. You know her from Post Media for the last about 15 years, covering the NHL, the Stampeders, all things Calgary sports. And she since went over to the dark side. She's on the PR side now with the Calgary Stampede. And we say that lovingly, of course. It's okay to go to that side and tell us what's really going on, because we on the media side hardly ever know what's really going on. KO, how are you?
I'm good. I mean, you say that I'm in the know now, but I had no idea that Kevin Costner was in the works as the Calgary Stampede parade marshal. So that was a pretty good secret they kept.
That was a pretty good one. I'm fascinated to know if you had any sort of communication with him, or will you have communication with him? I'm not really one of these star lookers or whatever, but I am intrigued by this guy.
You mean like I can't, you're asking if I can get you like a rodeo seat with Kevin to watch the rodeo,
something like that.
Kevin's the cool thing about having Kevin Costner as a parade marshal is his schedule is so tight because of the Yellowstone. He's like literally filming the fifth season of Yellowstone in Montana, so he is flying in for the parade. He is going to do a few different things around the city, and then he's heading to Stampede Grounds for a sound check. His band, Kevin Costner and Modern West, is playing at the Virgin Plus stage at the Big Four Roadhouse, and then that's it. So Rip's coming now too, which is kind of cool, but. Yeah, it's a cool time to be Calgarian and to know that this is our event and we're back, you know, and that's pretty cool. The Stampede Parade is back and kicking things off.
Well, and that's why I'm glad to have you on, because I wanted to talk about, you know, it feels like it's been a long time, and it has been since we've been to the rodeo or the chuck wagons. I guess I want to ask you, like, what's new? Let's start with the chuck wagons. Is there anything new? Anything people we should be looking for? I know that there's a new Benz Miller in the scene now. There's Kurt, there's Chance, and now there's Cruz Benz Miller. I love it. Every year there's a new family member. It's great.
They're like the Sutters of the,
that's right,
the chuck wagon world. The chuck wagon world. Yeah. It's cool that it, I mean, chuck wagon is such a family sport, you know. It's often passed down from generation to generation. And it's back this year. That's another thing, too, including the Stampede Parade. So, you know, you're able to come down and watch the chuck wagons in full force. They're going to be three wagons. So it's going to look a little different this year. There's going to be three wagons instead of four. And you're going to notice that actually a delineator arm, it's called. So it's actually a barrier on the inside track, which really prevents, or it really creates a safer environment for the horses and their riders. Just kind of a barrier, providing a barrier in between them and the inside track. So it's going to look a little different, a little bit less teams as well too. So it's going to be the barns are going to be, you know, a little bit less busy, which is a good thing because the riders can warm up their horses with more ease. There's more areas to warm them up and ensure that they're ready for competition. So, you know, a few changes being made for the safety of the horses and the riders, but still all the same excitement. And, you know, I know it's such a thrill to bring your buddies and your friends and your family or in from out of town and show them a good time and the whole shebang, the chuck wagons, and then we have relay racing this year, which is kind of cool. So it's a good
night. Tell me about the relay racing.
Yeah, so a really, really neat way of celebrating Indigenous history in Canada, in Western Canada, is our relay racing. So we have two heats new this year of relay racing, where you see competitors from, there's seven teams from Canada and three from the U.S., including a couple from Siksika and Stony Nakoda. So they paint their horses, they get them all ready, and it's just fantastic. And then they race them around the track. So that follows the chuck wagons immediately after the chuck wagons, about 9:30. So you want to stick around for those for the relay races. And some of these competitors really have interesting stories too, like really, you know, neat histories. And really it's a sport that, you know, has really helped a lot of competitors. So having something to focus on and committing to. So you'll definitely want to catch that.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds awesome. Like I'm excited. I'm all in. I there's nothing that makes me feel more Calgarian than standing on the tarmac as the chuck wagons come down the stretch. I know that sounds like, but I almost get goosebumps just thinking about it. Like that is a uniquely Calgarian moment. They're coming down the stretch. You can feel them, their hoofs pounding, and the ground is almost shaking as they go by. Everyone's in their hats and their gear, their cowboy gear. It just makes me so proud to be Calgarian. So I'm so glad that we can get down there again this year and see it. Now she's Kristen Anderson. Cool. She's with the Calgary Stampede. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, and the cool thing about the Stampede is they do a really good job of making it easy for, you know, not Calgarians or people, you know, out of towners to understand the sport. Like they have on the Jumbotron, they have the rules and they have like the, you know, they have interviews with the chuck wagon drivers explaining how they, you know, the process and, you know, all the barrels they have to go around and why they do certain things. So it's, yeah, they make it a real, like you don't have to be a chuck wagon expert to know what's going on at the Stampede. You can figure it out within a first couple heat, your first couple heats. So
it's a great point. You know, I was introduced to it by the Bracco family. There's another family, a prolific family in town. They brought me there my first year in 94. And all I knew, he just said to me, make sure you bring a pocket full of loonies. That's all he said. And because of the gambling, the wagering,
yeah.
You know, and you rotate who gets to pick the horses and all this. I think it's just all part of the fun. And three wagon races, not a big deal. I know there are only two outriders now, too. They made that change a handful of years ago, I believe, from four to two. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, it's all part of the fun. I love the gambling on it and the wagering, and I like the show afterwards. I always stick around for the show. My family goes every year to the show and think that the young Canadians do such a great job, and make us proud again as Calgarians as well. Can I switch gears a little bit? Well, first of all, Cole Hauser's coming too. I have to talk about that. Anyone who watches Yellowstone, Rip might be the coolest dude in the history of TV. I'm going to go that far. He's coming to Cowboys, though, right? It's not an official Stampede appearance. He's just coming to Cowboys to make a celebrity appearance. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. Yeah, our neighbors right. With the Cowboys tent. Yeah. But
okay,
yeah,
so
he's cool and Beth, too. It would be neat if she could, you never know, maybe she could make her way up to Calgary, but yeah, it's a neat connection, right? That Yellowstone, Calgary, Montana, and they even referenced Stampede in one of the episodes too, which is totally unplanned and prompted. So that was cool.
We love that. Yeah, absolutely. I'm telling you, if Beth was here, I'm not sure that's a selling point. I'd be terrified to go to the grounds if I knew that Beth was there somewhere. Just hammered out of her mind. What an incredible character she is. Oh, my God. Okay, can I switch gears on you a little bit? I want to ask you, because I wanted to have you on the show after you left to go to the Stampede, but after, was it 15 years you were with Post Media?
Yes, 15 years. Yeah, 15 years.
How was it for you to watch? You covered the Flames for I don't know how many years it was, but it was a long time. And how was it for you to watch the playoffs without kind of being down there or being part of it? Was it relaxing? Was it, were you kind of, did you have pangs wishing you were there? Like, what was that process like?
I stressful because I still, there were some games that I was thinking in my mind of how to write. Like, it's funny as a journalist, you just can't switch it off, right? That side of it. For so many years, and for so many years, I covered the Flames for 8 seasons with 2 maternity leaves thrown in there. But it was, it was exciting. I think like the rest of the city, we were so we're so pumped. Like, you just wanted to keep it going. You know, the red lot is always so exciting. The way that the city responds to the Flames in the playoffs and how they get behind the team and everybody, it's being played everywhere you go in the city. And, you know, to be a part of, I saw when Johnny Gaudreau was first drafted and, you know, followed him all throughout his career, and to see the way he flourished during the regular season and then into the playoffs. And Matthew Tkachuk too, you know, following his career. And I always say this, you know, people always would ask me, is it hard to cover the Flames? Like, it's so much information to remember, but it's just so cumulative. You know, as a fan, even you just start to know things as you follow the team. And it was nerve wracking for me. But it was so exciting. Like, you just wished it would have gone on a little bit longer. But I mean, I don't know if I always used to say this too, like, any team that doesn't win the Stanley Cup, that you kind of underachieved. So I think, like, you have to look at the whole, the way that the Flames, you know, responded to adversity, and, you know, the way that they were able to, you know, make it an exciting, you know, it was kind of tough to lose against the Oilers, but that was a pretty cool thing. So you have to look at the bigger picture. And I think that's really hard to do when you're a journalist. You're sort of in the day-to-day trying to get stories and following, obviously, what's going to happen next year and the signings and the free agency. So as a fan, it's kind of nice to just sit back and watch it all kind of unfold. But certainly I had to laugh because, you know, just reading some of the stories, and I, you know, just reading everybody's different takes on it, on what happened. It was tough. Like, I'm sure it would have been really tough to write about the end of the season this year.
Well, it's interesting that you say that you found it like it was, you really did revert back to being a fan, right? For you, when you're in the middle of the media, that's not the way. It's stressful because you're on deadline, but it's not stressful because you want home team to win or lose. It's not about that anymore. But I guess when you leave the business, you can absolutely just be a fan. And I know that it's important for me during the course of a season to go to a handful of games and just go drink beer and enjoy the game and the sport for what it is. And I'm sure I know you got a chance to do that in the playoffs. So that was probably a nice refreshing change for you, and not worrying about deadline. That's something nobody likes to worry about.
Yeah, it was. And you kind of do forget that why you do it. You know, I did forget, I think maybe, you know, having two maternity leaves thrown into my tenure at the Calgary Herald and Calgary Sun. Like, yeah, you do forget a little bit why you do it. And then you look at the fans' reaction, and, you know, my youngest daughter, or my oldest daughter, is like, gets it now and starts cheering. And that's pretty cool too, to be, you know, you understand why you did it for so long. It is the coolest job. I do think I have the coolest job now, working for the Calgary Stampede, and being able to put on an amazing show for the next, you know, it's coming up quick, less than 2 weeks away and for 10 days. But it's like, it's go time for us right now. We're ready to welcome the community back.
Exactly. So let's go back there. Are there tickets still available for the rodeo or the chucks and all that, or are they pretty hard to get these days?
Yeah. So we're seeing a real, obviously a tremendous sponsorship and corporate response this year. So a lot of our corporate seats are, you know, going fast. If not nearing capacity. So businesses got on that bandwagon pretty quickly and are ready to host parties and host clients, and, you know, all the business that happens during the course of the 10 days, like, although it's, you know, you'll go downtown, it's kind of a ghost town because lots of people are out for lunch and late extended lunch stampede parties and stuff. So, but yes, I think tickets are definitely available for the evening show and rodeo. So, you know, secure them now. That's kind of what we've been saying, like, get on it quick, plan your parties, plan how you're going to get to the Stampede. Cause because it's going to be a good one this year.
Yeah. Oh, it's going to be great. Now, I want to know about the rodeo. That has been evolving for years with different things brought into the rodeo and taken out of the rodeo. Are there any significant changes this year for people who go every year?
So the normal events, so barrel racing, bull riding, tie down roping, steer wrestling, saddle bronc, bareback, those are all back this year, competing for a Cowboys and Cowgirls will compete for a total $1.5 million in prize money. So this is an incredibly important rodeo for these athletes because, you know, it's a make or break, you know, rodeo for them. It's make or break for their families. They can, like, guys and gals can really cash in coming to the Calgary Stampede. And obviously it's the stage they get to compete on. There's nothing like it. You hear Cowboys and Cowgirls talk about it all the time. Like, the atmosphere at the Calgary Stampede is incredible and they love it. And, you know, so do the animals that compete as well too. Our own Calgary Stampede bucking horses and animals, you know, you can, they just know it's go time when they come to the Calgary Stampede. So
new you can tell. Also, I love it. They get excited
I know it sounds, for somebody like for, you know, our urban audience, really, like it sounds kind of funny, but it's true. The animals really like get up for the crowd and they love putting on a show, and there is a difference. Like it really is. But new this year's team roping, that's a cool event that we're hosting, happy to be hosting WPRC sanctioned, CA sanctioned event. Team roping is really popular in the States and at high school rodeos. So that's going to be happening one night at the Nutrien Event Center. So just one night only, but it's a cool one. So, and that's free programming too. So, you know, if you get a super pass, come down for 10 days, you can have a come down anytime you want, but you can also catch that for free. So another cool event happening at the Stampede this year.
Awesome. And the parade route is similar to past years as well. Not to get into the nuts and bolts of exactly where it goes, but same route?
A little bit longer this year, a little bit more spread out, which will be great for all the people that want to come down and see Kevin Costner. So I'm hearing he's bringing his own hat, but we're trying to get him to Smith Belt to get a perfectly fitted Calgary Stampede.
Oh yeah.
Calgary hat. Yeah.
And you got a white hat him as well. There's a whole bunch of stuff that's got to happen when he gets here. So I know you'll be busy, but thank you, Kristen, for joining us and getting us up to the speed on the Stampede. We miss you down at the Dome, but I look forward to seeing you in your cowboy hat and enjoying some deep fried Oreos. That's why the horses and the animals know that it's Stampede time. When they smell that incredible food starting to get deep fried, they know it's time. It's go time.
No.
That's what they know.
They know it's go time. Yep, exactly. Yeah, exactly. They're athletes.
Okay.
You know? Okay.
They are athletes.
Thanks much for having me
Kristen.
On.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much, and we'll see you down at the grounds.
Bye. See ya.
Bye-bye. That's Kristen Anderson. She's with the Calgary Stampede. And that's interesting. The parade route's a little longer. I love that they continue to change things. The Chucks with three wagons. I'm okay with that. Less chance of problems as they get out of the infield and make that dash around that first corner. I absolutely love the Chucks. I'm so pumped up to get down there and watch that. We have out-of-town friends coming from Switzerland, and there's nothing I'd be happier to introduce them to than the Chuck Wagons and the rodeo and stuff like that. See what all the hype is about here in Calgary. Okay. I want to thank Gord Stelic for joining us earlier. I want to thank Kristen Anderson for joining us now. And again, tip of the cap to our good buddy Boomer, who announced this morning that this will be his last week as the host of the morning show here in Calgary. Can't say enough about the approach he's taken to morning radio. I just think he's just such a nice, light, refreshing, his approach to the sports that I think some people take a little too seriously is just fantastic. And he will be missed, and I wish him the best as he moves along. All right, it's the Eric Francis Show. It's brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live standardbred racing is at Century Downs every Friday and Saturday through July and the first 2 weeks of August. So Friday, post time, 5:15. Saturday, post time, 2:15. Get down there and see what all the action is about down at Century Downs. I'm Eric Francis. We'll do this again every Monday here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.